show all about people's personal journeys to Bitcoin.
In this episode, I speak with Gandalf, not only Bitcoin's reincarnation of my favorite wizard, but also someone with great insight into what is being built on top of Bitcoin. We chat about adopting a deflationary mindset, why Bitcoin is a collectible, and the importance of number go up. Listen on to learn how competition between nation states is hotting up, why investing in yourself is in fact the best investment, and what his strategy is for creating compelling content. I never thought I'd say this, but I love having friends that are totally anonymous online. But here we are. This is a conversation full of insights, showing how Bitcoin is changing people's lives and enabling them to live to their potential on their own terms. Gandalf, once again, thank you so much for your time. If there is ever anything I can do to help, just let me know. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment to mention my sponsor, fastbitcoins.com. They're a Bitcoin-only exchange based in the Isle of Man on a really exciting journey. If you'd like to learn more about them, I encourage you to search back through my episode library and listen to a couple of key conversations. Firstly, Danny Brewster, the founder CEO, and secondly, Nathan Smith, the chief compliance officer. Both stories give an excellent insight into the people building the business. In the coming weeks, you can expect a custom referral link, which you can also use on sign up to get the best possible rates. We haven't quite put the finishing touches on it, so please keep your eyes peeled. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome back to Bitcoin with Jake. I'm speaking with Gandalf, the wizard who, well, I must say, I looked up to Gandalf a lot as a Lord of the Rings fan growing up. So to me, a Bitcoin version is very exciting. Welcome, Gandalf.
Hey, Jake. Thank you very much for having me.
My absolute pleasure. So this is a Bitcoin podcast, as you can tell from the title. And what I love to uncover is people's personal journeys. So as much as you can go into detail about what's brought you to today, we'd love to hear about that. Obviously, you're as anonymous as you can be, so that's totally fine. Who or when did Bitcoin first come across your radar?
I couldn't tell you the first time it came across my radar, because I probably have read about it in mainstream media years ago and just forgot about it. But the first time that I sort of remember paying attention was in 2017. So I used to be a real estate agent, and I was out viewing apartments with a client, and he was telling me about how he had bought Bitcoin at some ridiculously low number and it shot up to whatever it was. I think it was like, you know, he bought it in the hundreds and it was like, yeah, it had just broken 1,000 or maybe 2,000 in sometime in like the first half of 2017. And he was telling me about Ethereum as well. I made a little note to, yeah, I looked into it. I think I thought all the standard things like, oh, it's a bubble, it's open source, anyone can just copy it, it has no intrinsic value, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I just made a note to keep an eye on it. Obviously, it shot up to 20K and then went down. Yeah, the sort of the bubble, the proverbial bubble burst. And I was like, I was vindicated. I was like, see, I was right. It was just a bubble, blah, 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 blah. But I still, because of that experience, I guess I still kept an eye on it. And in 2019, when it went back to 10K, I thought, okay, there's obviously something here. Like it wasn't just like, you know, bubble then burst. And obviously I hadn't studied the history because that had happened a couple of other times before then. But I just thought, you know, for me, it was the only bubble that I knew about. I'm like, if that, you know, if it's a bubble, it would have burst and then it would have never gone back up again. But since it's gone back up to 10K, there must be something here that I'm missing. So I bought a little bit with the intent of having some skin in the game so that I could then, you know, look into it, study it and try to understand it. But I didn't get a chance to do that until about the end of 2020. I was preparing to move countries. So from Hong Kong to Scotland, and I went to Scotland for 10 days to get the keys to my new place and just sort out a few things before we moved. And on the way back into Hong Kong, I had to do a 14-day hotel quarantine. So 14 days stuck in a hotel room without leaving. And between that trip and that quarantine period, I got to study Bitcoin for like 3 weeks straight. I was just listening to podcasts, watching videos. And that's when I started to get it.
Interesting. And there is obviously a lot to learn, and so many
so many kind of moments in your life where you look at it, nah, doesn't make sense, and you ignore it, or you get told that it's not worth your energy. And then suddenly there's this moment you go, hang on a second, what the fuck is this thing? And you just career down this hole, and suddenly every kind of spare hour you're like learning about it, and it becomes it's just an infinitely fascinating rabbit hole to head down. And hence here we are on a Bitcoin podcast, which is absolutely awesome. So you mentioned Hong Kong, you mentioned Scotland, you obviously lived in some different parts of the world. To the extent you're able to reveal, were you always just a real estate agent? I know that you now are running a newsletter which is focused more on kind of early stage coding and teaching yourself to perhaps change career. Talk to us a little bit about like what had brought you to the game in 2017 as a real estate guy.
So actually I graduated from university. I did my university degree was a bachelor's degree in economics of money, banking, and finance.
Okay.
And I graduated from that in 2011. And sort of as a teenager, when I was 14, I think my mom gave me the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was 14. And she was if somebody had given this to me when I was 14, you know, when I was 14, I'd be much better off today. So she wanted to do that for me. And that sent me down a rabbit hole of like looking at investing, saving. I became like sort of obsessed. I get obsessed with different topics, Bitcoin being one of them. I became obsessed with like Warren Buffett and investing in stocks and investing in real estate. And so I would just like devour books. So I wanted to, when I went to university, I wanted to go into like asset management. Mm-hmm. But it was 2011 when I graduated. We were still sort of recovering from the financial crisis and stuff. So it was just by chance that I got into real estate. I actually took, after like 8 months of job hunting out of university and not being able to get any of the jobs that I wanted, I ended up taking a job in a logistics company. And then I didn't really like that. But it's a whole different story. Anyway, just by chance, someone that I knew through family had started their own real estate. Actually, the founder, as a side note, the founder of the real estate agency where I worked is the one of the co-founders of Block One that then went on to do the EOS ICO, which is the largest ICO to date, if I'm not mistaken. Wow. They raised $4.7 billion. Anyway, I went to work for a real estate agency startup in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Happened totally by chance. I was going to get another job in logistics, and I just so happened to like, my mom ran into someone that she knew, and she mentioned that I was going to get a new job, and he said they were hiring. So I met up with him, and I really liked the entrepreneurial nature of being a real estate agent. So the way it worked, it was basically like we worked off commission only, so you could work as much or as little as you wanted, and you took home whatever, you know, a percentage of the dollars that you brought in revenue. And I was attracted by the unlimited upside of that versus a job where you're just getting paid a fixed amount, no matter how little or how much work you do. You know, you can get away with like doing the minimum. You don't really get rewarded for doing more. Whereas in the real estate, you know, if I was a really good real estate salesman, I could make unlimited money.
Yeah, there's definitely something very enticing about the commission structure. I worked as a ship broker for many years, so I understand exactly what you mean in terms of having an incentive at the year end, you know, getting paid bonuses and things like this. What kind of real estate were you helping to facilitate transactions on? So which real estate market were you focused on?
I was in Hong Kong. It was all residential.
Residential Hong Kong.
Yeah, okay. So sales and leasing.
Okay. And you know, today real estate is still seen as a very safe, sound, secure, and reasonable store of value. And when you say to people, I think Bitcoin's better, they'll often be like, you're a fucking moron, which is part of our challenge as people trying to, you know, educate about Bitcoin. But at the time, you obviously hadn't necessarily come across Bitcoin, but the type of investors you were meeting, the type of business deals you were structuring, is there any way that helped you to understand Bitcoin for what it is?
I think, yeah, I don't think, even though I studied a degree in economics of money, banking, and finance, I don't remember being taught what money was. I was into like gold and silver for a little bit. And I actually did my university dissertation, my thesis on silver. And yeah, I none of that helped me that much in understanding Bitcoin, I don't think. I think it was only when I started studying Bitcoin that I like really, for the first time, looked at what money was. Perhaps I'd looked at it in the past. I didn't remember. Obviously, I think like having even if it's Keynesian economics, understanding financial instruments, whether it's stocks, bonds, real estate, like it does help you compare Bitcoin and have some context around how Bitcoin compares to other assets, even though I don't really look at Bitcoin as an asset, but I know many people in the traditional financial markets do. So I'm guessing yes, but because like I already knew all this stuff, it's hard for me to look from an outside perspective and like say, oh, this really helped me understand this bit or whatever. Because I already had this knowledge. I'm sure it helped. But yeah, I felt like Bitcoin was like, even understanding what money was like mind-blowing and groundbreaking. So
yeah, that was enough, right? Holy shit. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I see. I get your... It compounds, you know, all that other study that you've done to understand what's a good investment helps to understand when you start heading down into the Bitcoin hole, the context that you're in. And actually, once you get deeper down, you realize it's not necessarily an investment, so to speak.
Plus you're looking at everything through a Keynesian economics lens. Like there is, everything goes up in price, the value of, you know, there's inflation, you're trying to beat inflation, and like getting into a mindset where everything is deflationary because Bitcoin or the money is harder than whatever assets you might be investing into. Like, I think the reason we've seen such a bubble in basically all assets and even things that weren't assets before but now have become assets is because like our money is so soft. Nobody can just go to work and save dollars in their bank account for 20, 30, 40, 50 years and pass it on to their children and their grandchildren. You have to buy, everyone's being forced to buy assets. That's why the index fund industry has become so huge, because that's like the simplest way for somebody to just not save in fiat and save in something else that's a little bit harder without having to do any work to understand, you know, what's behind an index fund, like how to value a company, how do bonds work. You know, there's a lot of people that don't understand how bonds work, right? It's very confusing. It's like yields are going up, so that means the price of bonds is going down. Like you'd think something going up is good, but in bond terms, it's bad.
Yeah, the risk is just increased on the debt. It's interesting, isn't it? And so you did economics, finance, and banking. It sounds like a very similar degree. If you finished in 2011, I also finished in 2011. I went to Leeds University Business School and ended up graduating a bachelor's in just management, so straight business management. It's like a business studies degree. And we had banking lectures. I did a lot of, in hindsight, what was Keynesian economics, macroeconomic style study. And as you mentioned, it's all about like, how do you beat inflation and really coaching you how to make money. But it never asked the question, what is money? And it's why, I mean, Robert Breedlove, shout out to him, legend, came on the podcast, and his show, What is Money, is just so brilliant from that perspective. Like, hang on a second. Why did we never... Like, I literally spent years of my life studying this stuff, but never asked that extremely fundamental question. And whether that's like, one can be conspiratorial for a second by design, who knows? But how interesting. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what it means to move from that inflationary mindset to a deflationary mindset. It's a really interesting concept. How has that changed your life?
I mean, I'm not sure that I spend a little bit less. I save a little bit more. I think about my purchases. But I don't know if that's because of like changing to a deflationary mindset, or that's just because like I feel like, you know, well, I think it's more of like, I just want to, acquiring Bitcoin is sort of even like a hobby. It's an emotionally pleasing hobby beyond the rational financial side of it. Like, it's like if you collect cars, you always want the next Pokemon. Car or whatever. Yeah, Pokemon or whatever. So I kind of look at it as like as a collectible. I want to collect as much Bitcoin as possible.
Yep.
It just also happens to be that it's also money, and it's good to save in it over a long enough time frame. I would just say I've become more. I have something now that it's like that I want more of, more than I want like material goods. So. But I'm not sure if that has anything to do with the, like, changing to a deflationary mindset or anything like that. Yeah. I mean, I just bought my first property just before I got into Bitcoin, which was hilarious. And I'm in the process of selling it now. So, you know, I think more about those types of things, about whether, you know, I want to lock up capital in a property, whether that's a property I want to live in or a property that I consider, you know, more as like a business investment that cash flows.
Cool. And so just to rewind again to around about 2017, and you were working in the real estate industry, and you've already touched on some of the subjects that you'd become passionate about post leaving university, including Warren Buffett and other stars of investing. What's happened post 2017 and really starting to get your head around Bitcoin? Do you still work full time in real estate, or are you working in the Bitcoin space full time? And how did that transition happen, if at all?
Yeah, so 2017, I was just focused on like working my income and my friends and stuff. So I wasn't really thinking about like investing. I hadn't really like saved money or invested since I was a teenager, basically. So probably like almost 10 years at that point, I had just like, I just made money, saved it, spent it, and that was it. I was more focused on like, how can I increase my income? So I ended up buying a business in 2019, also in the real estate industry, a lettings management and property agency. Okay. And so that's what I was obsessing with, like building a business, building equity in a business. And that's actually how I got the time. So after I started to understand Bitcoin at the end of 2020, I actually had, and it was before I moved. So my last 6 months in Hong Kong, I basically had 24 hours a day to study Bitcoin. So that's when I made my Twitter account, and I basically just spent 6 months listening to podcasts, watching videos, and tweeting.
Wow.
Until I got a job. So yeah, you asked me what I do now full time. So I've just sold my shares in the business. But back in July, so I saw a job in April 2021. So a couple of months after I got my Twitter account, I saw that Brainz was looking for somebody to help them with their social. So Brainz is a Bitcoin mining company. We operate Brainz Pool, which is formerly known as Slush Pool, and also Brainz OS Plus, which is a firmware basically to get more sats from the same power consumption from your miners. So I applied for a job there. I got that. I started working there in July 2021. I'm still doing work with Brainz, and I'm also now working with Coin Corner as well, which is a Bitcoin exchange here in the Isle of Man. They're expanding out into the UAE and to Dubai in a joint venture with the Dubai Royal Family. So I'm helping to lead that project for them.
Well, shout out to Coin Corner. I actually just bought some Bitcoin using their exchange today. So
nice.
It's working well for me. Fast Bitcoins haven't yet developed a GBP bank transfer process. So I've been using Coin Corner. It's working very nicely for me. So thank you to you guys and the team there. Appreciate that.
Glad to hear it. Yeah, we're focusing in the idea with Dubai. Obviously, you know, buying Bitcoin is the core product, but we are trying to also push Bitcoin as a medium of exchange. So a lot of the energy is going to be focused on getting onboarding merchants there using the Coin Corner checkout product.
Okay. Interesting. Wow. Okay. And so, you know, you mentioned you set up your Twitter profile. Can you think back to that period? What were some of the most engaging conversations that you came across that really kind of caught your attention? And what was it that was so interesting about the space?
I guess initially it was just about making money. It was about number go up. So anything that talked about how Bitcoin could go up in value was very intoxicating. As many people say, right? You come for the greed, you stay for the revolution.
Yeah.
The other day I realized like, it doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. You can come for the greed, stay for the revolution and the greed as well. Because no, well, obviously we all want our purchasing power like to go up, whether it's like owning, you know, saving in Bitcoin or investing in something else in yourself so you can learn new skills and then make more income, or whether it's like you buy a business that generates revenue and cash flow for you. Like, we all want to improve our lives, look after our families and all of that. And so having hard money, having something like Bitcoin is a huge part of that. And so, yeah, that was definitely like what enticed me the most at the beginning is like, and I hit it like literally from, you know, I started like seriously acquiring Bitcoin in when it was like, I guess 15K. Yep. And it was the end of November, beginning of December 2020. So like my first experience of Bitcoin was I run up from 15 to 64K in like 3 months. Yeah. It was hilarious. Obviously I'd started investing again in April 2020. Like, we were in lockdown, business was going well. So I was like, okay, let me have a look at some stocks again. So I got to experience like the whole craziness of from April to the end of 2020 in stocks. And then when I got into Bitcoin, I was like, I want to allocate mostly to Bitcoin. So I got to like, you know, because I don't know if you were looking at stock markets after COVID, but I'm sure you know, but they also went crazy. Yeah, I bought Tesla at some point ridiculously low, and that went up like however much. And I bought some Spotify shares before they announced the Joe Rogan deal, and that shot up. I had Square. I had a bunch of stuff that was just like everything was just going up. It was literally up only. So it was and I wasn't even looking at Bitcoin. The hilarious thing is I had some Bitcoin. COVID happened, you know, Bitcoin went to 3K. I was like, meh, whatever. Like because I was like, I bought it. I'm never touching it again. Like, I'm not selling. That's just staying there forever. So I didn't even look at it. I didn't think about buying more Bitcoin or anything at the time, because I hadn't taken the time to understand it. So I was buying stocks throughout. And then when I understood Bitcoin, I was like, okay, I'm going to move out and allocate to basically just Bitcoin.
And I mean, I have so many questions. It's so interesting. Why do you think you are more interested in allocating to Bitcoin over stocks and shares? Like, what is the major characteristic in the two vehicles that entices you?
I see it as a time saver. Like, looking at stocks, you have to look at the different, if you want to pick individual stocks, you have to look at different companies, see how much, you know, project how much money they could make in the future, understand like different businesses, whether like, you know, if you're invested in Tesla, you have to understand the car business, some AI stuff. You know, if you're invested in Square, you have to understand each individual business model and their industries and who the competitors are and figure out who's going to win. And then you also have execution risk. Like, is Jack actually paying attention at Square and doing stuff, or is he just like in the Bahamas chilling? Or is Elon Musk going to die tomorrow and Tesla shares get cut in half because it's all about the entire company is based on Elon Musk being a genius? Like, all those things take up a lot of time if you want to do them well and do them properly. So Bitcoin, obviously I was naturally interested in it, but by, you know, hyper-focusing on this one thing and understanding it really well, I felt comfortable, you know, allocating to it without needing to diversify or whatever. Because why would you want to diversify from something that you understand relatively well and that you have a certain confidence level on the risk reward ratio of it, you know, to go to something you don't understand just for the sake of like diversifying? I've always been like, when you get something, go mostly all in. So understanding, you know, you spend the time, you just have to understand Bitcoin, money, how it compares to other potential things you might want to buy to have your purchasing power go up, whether it's stocks, bonds, real estate, or whatever. And then once you figure that out, then it's like autopilot. You just save in Bitcoin. And I don't care what stocks are doing. I don't care what Elon Musk is doing or whether he might die or whatever. You know, Bitcoin doesn't matter. No, it doesn't. There's no figurehead to die. It's not going to change. It doesn't have a business model. It doesn't have, I mean, you could argue maybe it has competitors, but if you understand the fundamentals, you know it's that over already, a long enough time period, they are going to go down in value against Bitcoin. Just because Bitcoin has the qualities, yeah, the qualities we desire from a decentralized peer-to-peer money.
I mean, so much of that really resonates with me, I have to say. And it's very interesting how similar the path is in some senses, and how many other people will tread the same path, already have, and many more so will after us. The idea that, and you've already mentioned cash flow generating businesses and freeing up your time, and how important that clearly was to you, in that you've made a bunch of decisions to be an equity owner in a business that could do that for you. And then you've come across a cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, that is incredibly interesting from that potential as well. So it's nice, isn't it? You suddenly, it's almost like let me think about an article that I'm going to write, and it's about, like, you know, Bitcoin made me, or Bitcoin helped me. And there'll be lots of different answers, but one of them would be calm. And it's helped me become more relaxed, because I know that my wealth is in a place that only I can access it, and it cannot go bankrupt, and it can't be taken off me. And that's the complete opposite to owning a house or owning a stock or any other currency. And that's just an amazing place to get to in some ways. And it then goes, okay, well, now that I can put my money into this, I've got free space to think about other things. And it's really kind of exciting and inspiring in some ways. So, and just jiving off that, are you going to be setting up businesses of your own around this? Like you mentioned, like cash flow is still a problem when you hold Bitcoin, because you can't necessarily gain a yield, and Celsius, et cetera, has recently taught us that that's really just not worth the risk. What are some of your plans moving forwards?
I mean, at the moment, I'm focused on my work with Brains and on my work with Coin Corner. So,
okay.
I look even myself as an individual working for companies, I still look at myself as a little business. So I'm not tied.
What,
like,
do you
for
mean
example,
by that?
Well, I'm not like I don't sell my time. I don't sell 100% of my time for a salary. I work for different companies on different things on different days. In a more flexible manner, rather than like I work for one company, I'm an employee of that one company, I go there from 9 to 5, and my entire professional life is based around doing that one job.
Nice. Okay. It's a lot more flexible that way around, and equally, it's about creating bigger upside for yourself with less time. Cool. Okay. Well, for those out there that don't necessarily understand Brains and much about the mining market, can you teach us a little bit about what your role is with them and what business they actually perform?
So yeah, Brains is they're in a nutshell, their business model is they provide software tools for Bitcoin miners. So a piece of firmware is software that you install on a miner. That's Brains OS Plus. A mining pool, again, is just a piece of software that aggregates hash rate from different miners, and you mine together and share in the rewards. So those are the two main pieces of software that drive most of Brain's revenue. And the business model, the way they operate, is they take a percentage fee for providing those services. Out of all the Bitcoin that is mined in the pool, Brains takes a pool fee. Out of all the Bitcoin that's mined using Brains OS Plus, Brains takes a fee from that as well. And that's it, basically, in a nutshell. So I can explain what Brains OS Plus does, because I think that's what people will be the least familiar with.
Please.
So when you buy an Antminer or a Watts miner, an ASIC miner, that comes with firmware that tells the hardware what to do. So it's basically like the lowest level software that's telling the firmware how fast to run the fans and how much hash rate, how much power consumption to use, etc. Brains is a third party firmware solution that allows you to control more of the different bits of the miner. And the idea is, so we've worked really hard to be able to optimize. Each ASIC miner has lots of little hash boards, and we're able to individually optimize how the hash boards work in order to make them as efficient as possible. So we can take, for people that aren't familiar, basically the inputs and outputs of mining are your main cost other than capital expenses, like buying the miner and finding somewhere to plug it in and buying racks and whatever, the main ongoing cost is electricity. So you need electricity to be as cheap as possible. And you preferably want Bitcoin price to be as high as possible. So that's how you get your margin mining. So if you can do anything to lower the electricity consumption for the same output of Bitcoin, you're obviously increasing your margins, right? You're reducing your costs, but keeping revenue the same. And what Brains OS Plus is able to do is that we're able to give you the same hash rate, so the same computing power for less electricity consumption than if you use stock firmware. Typically between 10 to 20% more hash rate per the equivalent consumption. So like, you know, if you're getting, let's say your miner is using 1,350 watts to get you 13.5 terahash, which is the power that you need to mine, essentially think of it as the computing power you need to mine. We can then take Brains, lower the wattage and still get the same hash rate. So you're consuming less electricity, but still contributing the same hash rate to Bitcoin mining, and thus you should be getting the same reward, all other things being equal. Obviously there's difficulty that comes into play, etc., and luck.
Interesting. It's, I mean, you see this in lots of different industries, but essentially there's hardware innovation and then there's software innovation, and they're very different types of product, very different specialist types of manufacturers of those things. So I imagine if you're selling software packages that sit on top of the hardware, you're actually a very, very scalable software business. And equally as a pool, maybe just talk us through a little bit how the pools function, but a really interesting niche within the Bitcoin market that I would imagine could be quite profitable.
Yeah, it is obviously scalable, but the main thing that the firmware industry faces, or the main challenge, is that the ASIC manufacturers do not want you to be putting third-party firmware on their miners for whatever reason. So they make it very difficult for you to flash your firmware onto their chips.
Okay.
So yes, it is scalable if you can figure out how to do it, which takes because of part shortages, different miners have different control boards, and you need to figure out a solution for each individual control board. So you can have, like, I think 4 different control boards or 5 different control boards for the X19 series of Bitmain miners. And for each one, we have to go figure out how to crack it, how to install, how to be able to let people install Brains OS Plus on that. So it's difficult. The pool's a bit more scalable in the sense that, like, you know, you're not running it on any anyone else's hardware other than, you know, your servers, etc. You're not relying on, or you're not dependent on whether Bitmain uses this control board or that control board, or they change the rules or whatever. So the way of the reason for pools existing and the way they work is to basically, if you're mining on your own, let's just say you have a couple of S19s or whatever, and you're mining on your own, your proportion of hash rate as a whole of the network is so small that your block rewards would come very far between each other. Maybe even, like, you know, every 30 years, maybe you get one block reward or something. So the way what mining pools do is they let you aggregate your hash rate with other miners. And then when one of you when one of you finds a block, the reward is shared between all the miners in the pool. Think about it like a lottery syndicate. You can buy the lottery by yourself and you have a small chance of winning a lot of money, or you can buy the lottery with in a syndicate with a million people where you have more of a chance of winning less money.
Interesting.
You win a millionth of a share.
So my experience in the shipping industry, an individual ship owner can only be at one place at one time, whereas a shipping pool, which is very common, let's say 100 vessels are all working together in aggregate, the best margin is made when a person with a cargo is in a desperate space. And so the more vessels you have on the water, the more regularly you come across the distressed purchaser of freight. And that's why pools actually function extremely well, and you can kind of centralize management of the vessels across the globe and make good money from it. So yeah, pooling is not an old business model in that sense, but really interesting to see how it's been reapplied to what is essentially an incredibly nascent industry. How cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to also just kind of go back to some of the comments you made around Coin Corner and the relationship that you're developing in the Middle East. So teach us a bit more about that and why it's important.
Yeah, so I guess like the big headline is that the joint venture that we're opening there is with the private office of the Dubai royal family. So they obviously, they're showing an interest in Bitcoin specifically, rather than, you know, they maybe could have picked a crypto exchange to partner with that did sold all other sorts of altcoins and shitcoins, but they've gone for us, which I think is interesting. And not many people are talking about the fact that, like, what are their alternatives, and how significant it is that they've gone for a Bitcoin focused exchange. I think that would be the headline. The other thing is that Dubai is just trying to become a hub for Bitcoin, and I'm going to say Bitcoin and crypto instead of just saying crypto, because I like to keep the two things separate. They want to be a hub for Bitcoin and crypto. So they're establishing specific regulations to regulate just what they call the virtual asset industry. The regulatory authority there is, they've bought land, they've bought a headquarters in the metaverse. Not, you know, I'll reserve judgment on how I feel about that, but you can see they're just trying to be a place where businesses in the Bitcoin and cryptocurrency space can go set up, and they know where they stand, and they have regulations that if they follow, they can do business. They're not going to get rug pulled by regulators. They're not operating in a gray area. So it's great to see that. Obviously also Dubai and the UAE has very little to no taxes. Most importantly, there's no capital gains tax. So it's obviously allows you to use whatever you want as a currency without paying capital gains when you dispose of, yeah, of whatever that is. So that's obviously very friendly to, and very, it makes the Bitcoin as a medium of exchange use case possible without any friction or without an additional cost that would be cap gains tax, as there is in much of the world. And the Isle of Man also has no capital gains tax. So Bitcoin, Coin Corner rolled out their Bitcoin checkout product to local businesses here as a testing bed for retail around the Isle of Man as a testing bed. Because obviously here we can just go and buy a coffee with Bitcoin, and we don't have to worry about whether we need to report a gain to.
Yeah, it's so painful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's nice. That's one of the reasons I moved here, is because I want to be able to use Bitcoin every day without having to report and keep a log of what's a gain and what's a loss and blah, 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 blah. Because basically impossible to do that.
Yeah. If you're doing day-to-day spending, you couldn't.
I mean, imagine you're buying, like, you know, you're on strike, you're buying £1 or $1 every whatever it is, every hour. That I think it's every hour is the minimum. You know, you're buying a dollar every hour, and you're also spending Bitcoin every day. How do you calculate which Bitcoin is going in, which one's going out, how much, what was your cost basis, how much the price was the day you sold or the minute you sold? Nightmare. So,
and it's the kind of thing that, it just, you know, you see politicians standing up talking about embracing innovation and some grant about something fucking blah blah blah, and on the very, very basic level, there are other parts of the world that have no capital gains tax on a digital form of money that shows you very clearly that there's a use case, people are already doing it, and that anywhere that isn't doing that is just slowing down innovation. So it's just bullshit, isn't it?
I mean, my philosophy on this sort of stuff is, I know there's people that want to stay somewhere and fight to change where they are. And I think the most powerful thing that we can do, and I understand it's not possible for everyone, or, you know, people don't want to make the trade-offs that it involves, is vote with your feet and go live in the place that's already doing what you want to happen. Right. If we all left the countries that don't have tax regimes that we would like, or left for better tax regimes, then the other countries would have to change in order to compete with those countries. But there's obviously very high switching costs to moving. that there's, you know, there's other things other than just the tax regime that would keep you somewhere, that would even make you say, I don't mind the trade-off of paying higher taxes and dealing with capital gains, because, you know, my, you know, I'm near my mom here, or I have my lifelong friends or whatever. Like, I've done it. I left Hong Kong. I left my lifelong friends for my fam to have a different life for my family. And then I left that place because I could still have a good life for my family and have a better tax regime and be more involved with Bitcoin stuff here in the Isle of Man.
Awesome. I like to try and focus as much as possible on people's personal journeys. And I'm absolutely fascinated by the fact that there are people globally converging on this new technology, Bitcoin, for numbers of different reasons. And every single person has a unique journey. So can you just expand a little more on what that's felt like? So it sounds like you grew up in Hong Kong, but then you decided to go to Scotland, and then you've ended up in the Isle of Man. So what are some of the... You've probably already touched on them, but what have been some of the major motivations for doing that? And what have been some of the hardest parts of doing that?
Oh, God. So we decided to move to Scotland. So I had this business in Hong Kong that could operate pretty much without a lot of my involvement.
Okay.
So the motivation to move to Scotland was that the business could keep ticking over in Hong Kong. The money we were earning in Hong Kong in Hong Kong from the business could go a lot further in Scotland than it would in Hong Kong. So that's, and we wanted to start a family. Hong Kong's very expensive in terms of just like living costs, real estate. If you want to have a couple of kids, like you're talking about paying $6,000-$8,000 a month in rent.
Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to make a lot of money, you know, and then you like, the local school system is in Cantonese. So if you want your kids, there are some English schools as well, but usually people, so-called expats, send their kids to a private school, add in another like couple of thousand dollars a month for that. It's just, it gets crazy in terms of expenses. Like you need to be making $20,000 USD a month to have a couple of kids and live a middle-class life sort of.
Wow.
So that was the motivation for moving to Scotland. Then I got into Bitcoin.
And sorry, Scotland was is there a family connection to Scotland in some way, or you just decided?
We were just going to move. So my wife is from the half Scottish, half English.
Right. Okay.
And we pretty much, because we could move anywhere because of the business, we didn't have to like focus on, oh, I need to move to this city because of work or whatever. We just kind of looked around and we're like, where can we buy a place to live that doesn't overstretch us financially and is a decent place that we know?
Yeah. Okay.
My wife is from Scotland, so we picked Scotland. We saw a place in Scotland that we liked, so we bought it and then moved there because of the real estate that we found.
Yeah, and it's so exciting as well. It's like trying different things. Like, yes, we're from somewhere in some senses, and we get very used to being in the same place and knowing the same people and going to the same places or whatever. But it's so exciting when you kind of tear it all up and try something different.
And I mean, Hong Kong's a very transient place. So yes, there is like a group of us that I grew up, you know, friends that have lived in Hong Kong that have been there since I was a kid, but they're all from different places. They're not originally from Hong Kong. And a lot of people come and go as well. So you're constantly, you know, you have a core group of friends that maybe sticks around, but then you also have friends that are coming and going. So every 5 years, somebody new comes, somebody leaves and whatever. Yeah. So yeah, and I've moved around as well. I lived in different countries before Hong Kong. My wife also moved around as a kid. Her dad worked in different places in Asia and Europe. So we're kind of used to moving-ish, even though like for 25 years, Hong Kong was my home. It's where I grew up.
Mm. Yeah. Awesome. I know it well, actually. I spent some time living in Singapore. So 4.5 years I was there. And visited Hong Kong a lot. And so I know exactly the kind of character. I mean, I would have been one in a sense. I spent 4.5 years in Asia, absolutely loved it. But then, you know, I moved on to different things. And so through this process, you've ended up in the Isle of Man. Some of the challenges involved, like what's been some of the most difficult parts of choosing to do this? And I'd love to kind of really highlight how you'd specifically built yourself an equity position in a cash flow positive business that allowed you to be physically mobile. But Bitcoin actually does that for you. So when you own a digital asset that is, you know, a seed phrase in your head, if you really need it to be, you can actually go anywhere you want. Just firstly, like what have been some of the biggest challenges of this geographical changes you're going through? And then you know, how much does actually Bitcoin going forwards, do you see it fulfilling the same role as what your equity position previously did?
I don't really see it fulfilling the same role in terms of that. I mean, it's digital.
It doesn't create a yield, does it? No.
It doesn't generate income. Yeah, okay. It doesn't generate income. So I can't, like, you know, I don't have people working for the business and the business operating and then generating an income on Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just Bitcoin for me is just a way to save, basically. And the way I would like, the way, if we want to look at, like, where would I so-called invest to get a return, Bitcoin would be number three in my list of things that I would invest in. Number one is always upskilling myself. So knowledge, ability. So information and skills is where I would go first.
Yeah.
Because literally no one can take that away from me.
Yep.
Right? A business can go bankrupt, can get into a fight with your business partner. Yep. A million different things can happen to the business. So investing in yourself, you're never going to lose that. If you learn to code, that's a skill you have. If you learn marketing, that's a skill you have. If you learn sales, it's a skill you have. And you can go and get a job with it or start a business with it and then generate income. So that's always number one. That's my number one position, let's say, is like, how can I get better? Number two would be a business. So not a stock, but literally either starting a business or buying an existing business, and preferably one that can operate without you. Not like, oh, I'm a single, it's just me doing like an agency. I do all the work. You have to be able to hire or use use human capital or software to scale that business and have it operate without it taking up, you know, if you need to expand, it takes X more units of your time proportional to the expansion.
Yeah, you have to work harder. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you want to detach your time from your end result.
Yep.
Right?
Interesting.
You can, like, for example, if you're selling attention, if I have 1 million followers and I do a tweet, that tweet is worth a lot more than if I have 100 followers and I tweet. It took the same amount of time, right? But the outcome is vastly different because I've scaled using the internet to get the attention of 1 million people with the same tweet versus the person with 100. So businesses and, yeah, that scale, that aren't just being self-employed, is probably almost worse than being employed because you have, like, all of the bad things and almost none of the good things, except perhaps a little bit more freedom. But yeah, freedom, when you stop working, you stop earning. So yeah, owning a business where it can operate without you having to increase the amount of time you spend on it necessarily. You can if you want to, obviously, and like doing certain things will take up more of your time, but the output isn't proportional to the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. Third would be Bitcoin.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah. And of course, Bitcoin is the foundations that, you know, it's not going away. You can stick it in Bitcoin. It's likely to have great upside from where we're at. I mean, 20 grand US dollars today, I think, is unbelievable buying opportunity that, you know, in months to come, we'll look back at that and be like, fuck, I wish we'd got some more. And yeah, interesting though about what you're saying about the business. It's something that I'm personally battling with, not battling, that's the wrong word, but having decided to quit my job and focus more on my family and then equally, you know, have a crack at some more time with this podcast, I don't want to recreate a situation in which, like, I'm doing everything behind the scenes. That means I'm fucking stressed and can't look after my kids as well. So it'll be a case of, like, okay, can I try and get some revenue from some sponsors? And then how do I kind of automate myself out of it, aside from, you know, obviously hosting interviews? But, you know, realistically, if you're producing one podcast a week, that's 1 hour that you've got to spend online and find the time to do. So it's not a huge amount of time. And hopefully it's a business that can create some decent cash flow. That means your expenses allow you to, you know, save your Bitcoin and not have to spend any of it. That would be the ideal situation to get into.
I think the key is that, like, doing something for yourself gives you the freedom. You can work as much as you, I'm not saying that, like, working 24 hours a day is necessarily bad or good. But yeah, I've like, you have a family, I have a family, so I don't want to be, I'm not like when I'm 22, where I was like happy just working all the time and my job was basically my entire life. Or so yeah, it's the freedom and the ability to outsource things you don't like doing and just focusing on doing what you're good at. And, or if you're lucky, also what you enjoy. Like I didn't, I bought a real estate business. I didn't really like the work, but I liked the fact that I knew how to do that, that, or how to run that business well and have it operate in such a manner that I didn't need to be the one doing any of the work I didn't want to do.
Yeah. Nice. So you could find the expertise that meant your attention wasn't taken by it. Yeah, very cool. Well, Gandalf, thank you for sharing all of this. It's great. So we've probably got another 10 minutes or so. I got a question from a follower, Matt. Shout out to Matty, who, when I said I'm speaking to you, he had a question that says, what's he doing to fix the world, excluding buying Bitcoin?
Oh, God, that's a big, big, big task. I don't know that I'm, I don't know that I'm doing like anything. Well, I'm definitely not doing anything, you know. You ask people about, I was watching a bit of the Bitcoin Amsterdam conference, and someone asked this lady, I forgot, I can't recall who it was, you know, why she's in Bitcoin. And she said, it's to change the world and give, like, you know, people who don't have bank accounts, financial access and all this stuff. And like, whilst obviously that's really nice and I'm all for that, that's not necessarily like, I don't have any huge dream like that or any huge mission. I'd say I'm just trying to like enjoy my life, do things that I think are fun and good, and you know, raise a good human being, and you know, not make the
maybe,
yeah, maybe a couple, and you know, generally just be nice to the people around me and hopefully be, have a positive impact on them. But I'm not like trying to impact a bajillion people and whatever, just more the people I touch. But yeah, just by being a generally, hopefully decent human being.
It's funny, I've, and another article I'm kind of playing with in my head is like Bitcoin is philanthropic. There's like a phrase. So you see these, you know, rags to riches stories where businessmen, women, they have a brand, they build a big business, they sell out for billions, and they're then, you know, 60. And they're like, I know what I'm going to do. You know, Bill Gates being the prime example, probably richest man in the world, gets heavily into whatever he does. And he's like a philanthropist now. And I think there's quite a good argument you could make for, you know, helping sound money permeate the globe and giving people the ability to interact with Bitcoin, trade with Bitcoin, save in Bitcoin is the most important thing for individual rights and the future of humans that you could possibly do. And this whole, like, I'm now a philanthropist because I made loads of money selling a technology product is completely redundant, basically. And all you have to do is say, okay, I'm buying Bitcoin and I hope everyone else does the same thing. And all of these other people that are working the Bitcoin ecosystem, developing, you know, products for the unbanked and helping people send Bitcoin via text message when you can't, you know, get signal in somewhere in Africa. It's fucking awesome. But you don't need to be involved in all those projects. You just have to buy Bitcoin and get on with your, you know, your family life. I haven't fully fleshed out, you know, what my conclusion of this kind of discussion would be, but it's kind of similar to what you're discussing there. So you don't have to be, you know, I'm going to change the world. Actually, no, you just got to buy Bitcoin, tell people that you bought Bitcoin, and actually Bitcoin is changing the world for everyone. Or at least that's how I see it. I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
I mean, I think adopting Bitcoin is a much better alternative than some of the other ways. Yeah, it's the fiat money standard, the current banking system, and all of that. So suddenly by encouraging and being a part of the adoption of Bitcoin, you're helping everyone else that is or will also adopt Bitcoin in the future, for sure.
And so you're
just saying, also, I also think like we do everything that we do is selfish in a way, even if you're doing stuff for other people, is because it makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Right. Like
I
nobody
must give back. I must give back, you know, this.
Well, if you enjoy it, brings joy to your life to do that activity. Nothing is just like in isolation, like only good for the third party that, you know, no one is 100% selfless. You think like, you know, why are some people, you know, let's say they're in Africa and living in pretty horrid conditions when they could be living in the West. Like, let's say there's like a, you know, a French person is living in Africa in hard conditions, dealing with like, you know, famine, children and illness and just like a generally horrible situation. But they're there because they're helping other people. And so like they're putting up with what is essentially not very nice conditions because it makes them feel good to be helping those people. Sure, they're helping the people and they are being selfless in that respect, but they're also being selfish because they're doing it because there's something there that makes all of that, putting up with all of that, worth it. So there has to be like a benefit.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
There is some kind of self-motive within there. There has to be. Yeah, cool.
And it's so, what drives all of us. Yeah.
You have a newsletter. I haven't, I confess, been an avid reader of it, but I know that it's been a point, you know, you really drove home earlier about investing in yourself and upskilling and learning to code. So how are things going in terms of your newsletter and the process that you're going through there?
So yeah, my original plan when I moving to Scotland was that business would afford me time to learn to code. And I thought learning to code was a really awesome thing because it's massively, infinitely scalable. I don't necessarily like having like loads of employees and working with lots of people. I like smaller teams working with fewer people. And I feel like code is a good way, like scaling a real estate agency is very human resource intensive. You need agents and you need to deal with a lot of people. So I like the fact that you could just sit down at a computer and with code, you could build something, you can ship it to like, you know, if you have followers on Twitter, you can immediately ship it to potentially thousands, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people and get feedback and tweak it all within a very quick feedback cycle. That was my main motivation behind that. And I mean, I've tried to learn to code probably since I tried to make my own website for one of my real estate businesses like 7 years ago. And between when I was working in real estate and now having these jobs in Bitcoin, the biggest challenge has been like trying to find time to do it and then doing it consistently. Because you can spend like a month studying and then you have 2 months where you're traveling. Like I go to conferences a lot as part of my job. My jobs. And you'll find, or, you know, I've moved countries twice in the last 14 months. I've had a child. So you just find like there's a whole bunch of stuff. You asked me earlier what like the challenges of the moves and stuff. Literally, it's just packing and unpacking and like not being settled. Yeah, it's awful. It's going very slowly and very, I would say, badly. But the main thing is that as long as you don't give up on it, you know, you'll eventually get there. I know so much more about everything than I did 2 years ago, even though progress has been like painfully slow. And the newsletter I just built because, I've sent out 3 issues. I haven't done an issue in a while just because like of all this chaos. But then the biggest thing I found for like content creation, at least for me, and for connecting with people, is just to share my experience. So if I'm learning to code and I've got like all these amazing resources, it takes not that long to copy and paste them onto a Word doc or a newsletter management system, and then send it out to people who might be interested in learning about what I'm learning about and just sharing. It's just basically like documenting what I'm already doing. Not like creating, I'm not going out of my way to like, right, I'm going to learn to code so I can then put content together so I can then do a newsletter about learning to code. I was learning to code and then I'm just documenting my process.
It's that kind of that phrase of learning out in the open that I do really like. And it's interesting. I mean, how do we teach ourselves new things? Well, we go online and we find someone that was learning it themselves and just showed us. It's something I'm going to do with the pod for sure is, you know, when I have time to sit down and kind of document how it's going and what I've been doing and, you know, we'll see what the feedback's like.
Yeah. I mean, the information is all out there. The value prop for the reader of this kind of newsletter is like, if you can't be bothered to Google it yourself and like I've spent God knows how many hours finding all the different things, So you just save those hours if you're just happy to like follow what I'm doing because you think I seem like a sensible person that you can maybe listen to, then yeah, you don't have to spend however many hours I've spent doing research and then finding courses and taking courses and reading books and whatever. You can just use my newsletter to save yourself a bit of time.
Brilliant. Well, Gandalf, an hour has flown by. I've kind of relaxed slowly as we were chatting offline. I was kind of hectic, babies all over the place, and I had to move a desk around. A candle kind of fell on the floor and exploded. And phew. Anyway, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. How can people get in touch if they want to reach out and chat?
Easiest way is just to go to my Twitter. So it's at my handle is at BTC Gandalf on Twitter.
Brilliant. Well, another awesome story. Thank you so much for sharing everything today.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks, Jake.
No problem. Pleasure.
Well done, friends. You made it to the end of the episode. I couldn't be more grateful for you sharing this time with me and putting your energy into this project. If you like what you hear, please, first and foremost, share it with your friends and family. Getting the message out to those around us nearest and dearest, I think, is one of the most important things we can possibly do. On top of that, wherever you listen to this, please rate, subscribe, share, etc. I'd really appreciate the support there as I try and build out this podcast. And lastly, I'm looking to build a network of startups and founders in this space. So if you know anyone that's interested in building a business and is looking for investment, please send them in my direction. Thank you so much, guys. You've been listening to Bitcoin with Jake.